So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter number 13, the Hamsavatara answers questions, text number 29. Ahankara kritam bandham, atmano artha viparyayam. Vidvān nirvidyā samsāra, chintām tūrye sthitasyajet, ahankārā kṛtam bandham, ātmano artha viparyayam, vidvān nirvidyā samsāra, chintam turiye sthitasyajet, ahankara kritam bandham, atmano artha viparyayam, vidvan nirvidya samsara, chintam turiye sthitasyajet, ahankar. By false ego. Kritam. Produced. Bandham. Bondage. Atmanaha. Of the soul. Artha. Of that which is really valuable. Viparyayam. Being the opposite. Vidvan. One who knows. Nirvidya. Being detached. Samsara. In material existence. Chintam. Constant thoughts. Turiye. In the fourth element, the Lord. Stita. Being situated. Tyajet. Should give up. Translation by the servants of His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The false ego of the living entity places him in bondage and awards him exactly the opposite of what he really desires. Therefore, an intelligent person should give up his constant anxiety to enjoy material life and remain situated in the Lord, who is beyond the functions of material consciousness. Translation responsibly. The false ego of the living entity places him in bondage and awards him exactly the opposite of what he really desires. Therefore, an intelligent person should give up his constant anxiety to enjoy material life and remain situated in the Lord, who is beyond the functions of material consciousness. Purport by the servants of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Sridhar Swami comments as follows. How does material existence cause the bondage of the living entity? And how can such bondage be given up? The Lord explains this here by the word ahankar kritam. Because of false ego, one is bound up in the network of illusion. Artha viparyayam indicates that although the living entity desires blissful life, eternity and knowledge, he adopts procedures that actually cover over his eternal, blissful nature and give him exactly the opposite result. The living entity does not want death and suffering, but these are actually the results of material existence, which is therefore useless for all practical purposes. An intelligent person should contemplate the unhappiness of material life and thus become situated in the transcendental Lord. The word samsara chintam can be understood as follows. Samsara or material existence indicates material intelligence, because material existence only occurs because of the living entity's false intellectual identification with the material world. Because of this misidentification, one becomes overwhelmed with samsara chintam, anxiety to enjoy the material world. One should become situated in the Lord and give up such useless anxiety. Om agyana dimarandasya gyananjana shalagya chakshurunudam vena tasmai shri guru vinamaha mukham karoti vachalam pangum rangayate gyanam et kripatama mande shri guru dindarinam. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shri Vasudhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram. The false ego of the living entity places him in bondage and awards him exactly the opposite of what he really desires. Therefore, an intelligent person should give up his constant anxiety to enjoy material life and remain situated in the Lord, who is beyond the functions of material consciousness. So, this is a very interesting verse in this section of the Bhagavatam. This verse describes how we come into material existence, or how the living entity comes into material existence, and how he gets exactly the opposite of what he or she desires, and then how to come out of such bondage. So in one verse, there's a lot of points in this one verse, a lot of concepts. So we see that the jiva is actually pure in consciousness. In its original state, the jiva is pure. Just like when water falls from the sky, rainwater, it is actually pure. But when it comes in contact with mud, it gets contaminated. Or we can see this, like light is always like white. But when you put different kinds of like films in front of it, in different colors, it exhibits like red, blue, green or whatever. So similarly, the consciousness of the jiva is actually pure, in a pure state. But because of misuse of free will, false ego arises. And so false ego means to basically to identify oneself with matter. And that's why like false ego is very, very dangerous. Because we see sometimes because of false ego, people leave practicing Krishna consciousness. You know, because like what happens is like we can see like this is what happened in the spiritual world, but it even happens in the material world. Like say somebody is in Krishna consciousness, but they leave after a while because the free will is misused, and as a result the false ego boosts, and as a result one leaves. So spiritual life is actually compared to a razor. You know, for those who shave, like one has to be very careful with the razor, how you use a razor. Of course, these days you get like, you know, Mach 3, Mach 2, you can't cut yourself. But when Prabhupada writes, you know, spiritual life is like a razor, around that time they used to get those blades, you know, that in India you get those razors, you open them like this and you put a blade inside. So you have to be very careful when you're shaving your face or head with that, because slightly you're inattentive or, you know, careless, you can cut yourself. Sometimes like brahmacharis, they're shaving, so they shave with something like that. And if they're not attentive, they cut the other person and they like sign their initials. So spiritual life is like that. It is like you're using a razor. So if we are unattentive to the process of spiritual life, it can give rise to false ego, and that can actually take one away from Krishna consciousness. So similarly, like that, from the spiritual world, the jiva comes down because of that misuse of free will. So false ego is basically an imaginary bridge between the soul and matter. Actually, the soul never comes in contact with matter. It is this this imaginary link. It is this like a virtual link, you know, like those who study computers, like there's Brahmakund Prabhu would know better. So like they have that VPN. What's that full form of that? Virtual private network. So it doesn't exist, but it's a virtual network there. So similarly, that actually, the spirit and matter, they are never together, but it is this virtue, this is this false imagination, this link is there with which, that's called false ego, that link, which binds the jiva to matter. And so in this verse we can see what actually false ego does to us. So like, false ego, it makes us think that we are independent. False ego makes the living entity think that it is actually independent of the laws of nature. Like, you know, people think, you know, especially in this day and age, you know, today's world is a very free world. Everyone thinks they're very free. They have so many choices. They have so many careers to choose from. They can go to so many places of enjoyment. They can choose so many different types of food. You know, they're free to travel everywhere. You know, these days, you know, traveling is very popular. You know, they're so independent. You know, people think. But this is under the influence of false ego. But actually, we see that in reality, that we are not actually very independent. We are actually forced by the modes of nature to work in certain ways. Like Srila Prabhupada describes, we are forced to act under the pressure of modes of nature. You know, you can imagine if like somebody forces you to do something. You know, we come in circumstances in which sometimes we are put under pressure. You know, so if you're working out there, like your boss might put pressure on you, you know. They want you to achieve something, achieve the target, so they'll put a lot of pressure on you. So then you are forced to work in a certain way. So similarly, when one acquires false ego, when one comes in contact with matter, actually the modes of nature dictate us how to act. Actually the living entity is not very independent, but out of illusion it is thinking that it is very, very independent. It has so many choices. But depending on what mode the living entity is in contact with, it is forced to act in a certain way. If the jiva is in contact with the mode of goodness, then as was, you know, described in the previous verses, that you know, he will be interested in a clean lifestyle, cultivating religiosity, knowledge, you know, such kind of things. So these are the symptoms of the mode of ignorance. Sorry, it's mode of goodness. Then mode of passion, you know, very strong desires, hankering, lamentation. So these are the symptoms of the mode of passion. So like, you know, like there'll be, so we can see everything is divided into the modes. So like the food, people, you know, sometimes people think they're so independent to choose, but they can choose from so many varieties of food. But actually they are pushed by a certain mode of nature to take a certain type of food. Like for example, the person in the mode of ignorance, he will only like to eat like rotten food or meat but then he'll think, because I'm independent, I can choose from so many types of meat. There is fish, there is crabs, that's a type of fish. There is, you know, beef, there's chicken, there's so many kinds of this big variety, but I have a choice. So we can analyze our activities also. Activities are also classified in the modes. You know, they'll be attached to a certain type of activity, but within that they'll think they're very, very independent. Or, you know, even charity. Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita that different kinds of modes. So there's people who make charity, they do in a particular mode also. Like, you know, most people these days, they make charity in the mode of ignorance. Like they don't know who to give charity to, who is actually a worthy candidate for receiving the charity. Like, you know, if you're walking on Swanson Street, sometimes people give charity to some bums or, you know, some buskers, but they have no control over their senses. They don't know how to use that. They actually use it for sinful purposes. So in that way we can see that actually nobody is independent. They are forced to work under the pressure of the modes of nature. So these modes of nature, they are actually pressuring us all the time. You can try to put ourselves, think like that. We all have gone through circumstances in which we have been put under pressure. But we see that this illusion is shattered every now and then, you know, when people think they're very independent. Like these days we are seeing so many catastrophes take place. Like now, what's that, American Samoa, the tsunami which took place. So it killed so many hundreds of thousands, hundreds of people, you know, in American Samoa. And then the earthquakes in Indonesia. So we can see when there are catastrophes, or when people are struck by some severe calamities, then they begin to realize that actually we are not independent. That there are laws of nature above us, you know, which are actually controlling us. But that kind of remembrance is actually very short-lived. After a while, again, they forget by the influence of illusion. So we actually see that the living entity is not independent, but actually the jiva is actually imprisoned. It's imprisoned by the modes of nature. And modes of nature means guna. Guna means one meaning of guna is rope. So the living entity is actually tied by the ropes of the modes of nature. So we have this, you know, so like when somebody like ties the hair, they braid the hair. So like the ropes, the modes of nature, they actually tie the living entity like this, you know. They form a very strong rope and then they tie them around. So actually it's very, very hard to get free from the modes of nature. And what the false ego also does, it makes us think that we are the doer of the activity. It's this famous verse. Prakritik remanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahankar vimuratma kartaham iti manyate. So it actually convinces the person that he is the doer of the activity. You know, there's a saying like, sometimes people tell you, I've come across this a lot, like, you know, if you want to achieve something, you just meditate on it and you can actually do it. You just have a strong desire for it. If you want to do anything, you just meditate on it and, you know, keep yourself very positive and you can achieve that thing. So in that, this way people, they think that they are the doers. But from Bhagavad Gita we see that there are actually five doers. We are not the only doer. We are a doer in the sense we desire, but we are not the ultimate doer. It's like once, I was talking to one devotee long time ago, and he had washed pots for many years here, like 10, 20 years. And we were discussing this topic about the doer from the Bhagavad Gita. And he said that, I was explaining, like, for example, if you're washing the pots, we desire to lift the pot, so then material nature fulfills that desire. The super soul, has to sanction that, and then material nature carries out that particular desire, and then we can lift the pot and wash it or whatever. So that person, he told me, so you mean to say for 10, 20 years I'm washing pots, you know, actually I'm not washing it, somebody else is doing it. You're saying that I'm not a doer, that's not possible. So you see, actually people are convinced that they are the doer of any activity. And this doership actually breeds pride. So when one thinks one is the doer, then that results in pride. But actually we understand that from the Gita that there is the body, and in the body are the senses. And then there is a performer of the work, which is us, the Atma. And then there is an endeavor to do different types of work. And then there's the super soul itself. So actually the role of the jiva is only to desire what to do. And then the super soul has to sanction that desire in order for that activity to be carried out. Otherwise that, it's not possible. And we see actually people have so many desires, but all of them are not fulfilled. You know, people try in so many ways, but not all their desires are fulfilled. These days especially is going that there's so many courses on positive thinking, you know, all these kind of things. That if you think positively and you can achieve whatever you want, but that's not really the case. The super soul has to sanction our desires. And unless the desires are sanctioned by the super soul, they're not possible to be carried out. And also under false ego, we think that we are the proprietor of our actions. But just like, for example, Arjun put himself in the bodily concept of life. Krishna put him in the bodily concept of life. He's a Nitya Siddha devotee. So under the influence of false ego, he was thinking that, you know, if I kill my relatives, if I kill my grandfather, great-great-grandfather Bhishma, or if I kill my teacher Drona, then I'll be actually subject to the reactions. Because he was actually taking proprietorship of his actions. He was taking responsibility for the actions. So he was thinking, if I kill them, I will get a certain kind of reaction. But when Arjun, he fought according to the desire of Krishna, then he was free from proprietorship. Because then Krishna decides what result you get. It's not that Arjun will get a reaction. Because Arjun is doing the activity for Krishna, then he's free from the proprietorship of actions. Because due to false ego, the living entity takes proprietorship and then it gets certain reactions, you know, either good or bad. But if we work for Krishna, then it is free from reactions. And also ultimately, we know, false ego leads to forgetfulness. Because when there is false ego, then the bodily concept of life is very strong. And as a result, one cannot figure out who one is, or who God is, who Krishna is, and what to speak of, what is our relationship with Krishna. So false ego leads to all these different things, especially forgetfulness. Also, I was reading how in Srila Prabhupada was mentioning, due to false consciousness or false ego, it makes us think that we are actually the enjoyer and creator of everything. But in reality, actually, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and creator. And we are only the cooperators. We only have to cooperate in Krishna's enjoyment and creation. Just like if, for example, if there is a part in the machine, if that part thinks that, you know, it can function on its own, can enjoy on its own, that's not possible. That part has to work in relation to the whole machine. Or just like we can take a body, we have all these different, we have the hand, the eyes, the legs. So the hand cannot think that it is the enjoyer. You know, actually the stomach is the enjoyer. All the different parts of the body, they have to cooperate and work together to feed the stomach. So when the stomach is happy, when the stomach is not rumbling, the stomach is happy, satisfied, then all the other bodily parts also get nourished. So our position is actually of cooperation, not of the enjoyer and the creator. And another point in this verse is that the false ego, the living entity, places him in bondage and awards him exactly the opposite of what he really desires. So this is a very famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita. It's 5:22. Yehi samskarsha jabhoga dukha yunaya evate adi antavanta kaunteya nateshu namate buddha. So Krishna says, an intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. So, this is actually a very key verse, and if we can understand this verse properly, this will actually help us a lot in our spiritual life. And basically here Krishna is redefining intelligence, because generally we in the material world, people think, the function of intelligence is to discriminate and is to help the senses to make choices. So materially people think that with my intelligence I can figure out how to get sense gratification. I can figure out different ways how to acquire sense gratification. And I can figure out different ways from which I can guard my sense gratification from getting ruined. Just like, for example, you know, people, they are they're using the intelligence to figure out which kind of career is the best for them. So, and what is career used for? So that they can actually enjoy in the world. You know, they can get a good job and enjoy. So in this way, people are using their intelligence in different ways to acquire their sense gratification. At the same time, they're using their intelligence. When they acquire what they want, then they use their intelligence to make that sense gratification even better. Just like, for example, if you buy a computer, then, you know, if you bought a Pentium and it is 2 gigahertz, you know, that's the processing speed. But then, you know, people use their intelligence and they can overclock the processor. That means from 2 gigahertz you can make it 3 gigahertz. So you can go in the BIOS and you can change the hardware settings, and that way you can overclock it and you can get more performance out of it. So in this way, people, the materially intelligence is used to, you know, whatever people have got to make it even more relishable. And also with and Krishna says in this verse, yehi samsparsha ja bhoga. Bhoga means enjoyment. So when actually the senses come in contact with the sense objects, there is some enjoyment, you know. And actually that's why everyone is running after this enjoyment. But Krishna says, when the senses come in contact with the sense objects, that is actually a source of misery. You know, now this is actually redefining the whole concept of happiness. Krishna is redefining the whole concept. This is like reverse engineering. You know, like, so, because everybody is so conditioned of thinking that, you know, whatever, like, you know, whatever in modern society, whatever we do, that will actually bring us happiness. Like, you know, if we analyze the whole life, like from childhood till now, whatever we have done is we have come in contact with the objects of the senses. Like a child, you know, a child wants, child cries for attention, or child wants to play with some toys, so it will cry and it will get the toys. So we see even animals, they do like this. They try to come in contact with their sense objects. And Prabhupada gives the example of touch. I was reading a lecture on this verse, and Prabhupada gives the example of touch. Like, the sensation of touch seems to be very, very pleasing, but actually it ends up in misery. And the example is of the elephant, you know. How they capture an elephant? They use the she elephant. So the elephant is very addicted to the sense of touch. So the she elephant goes, and the male elephant runs after the she elephant, and then it falls in a ditch. So we see actually that the senses, when they come in contact with the sense objects, they lead to unhappiness. And there are so many examples of that. Like people, like you know, like people, they sorry. Like, say somebody wants a nice career, okay? They want to have a certain kind of job, so they will endeavor in a certain way. And actually that endeavor in itself is also suffering. Just like, you know, somebody wants a very high degree, so he has to study for so many years, he has to give so many exams. Or like students want to come to America, so they have to give this, from India, students want to come to America, they have to give that TOEFL? GRA. So that is actually so much suffering, because they have to put in, you know, they have to burn the midnight oil, they have to study for so many hours, and then also they don't clear it. It's very hard to clear it. But people think, you know, it is still worth it, because there is still a little drop of happiness there. So it is still worth it. So we should actually challenge ourselves in this way. You know, when we read like such, when we come across such verses, we should actually challenge our intelligence, because we have been in this material world from time immemorial, from such a long time, and our intelligence is so dulled. You know, we are like conditioned to think in a certain way. We are simply conditioned to use our intelligence materially. But Krishna is speaking this verse so that we can actually challenge our intelligence. And that's why we have got this human form of life, because only in this human form of life we can use our intelligence like this. In other forms of life, you know, it is not possible to question like this. We see the animals are not questioning like this. You know, they are acting in, you know, we don't see animals coming together and discussing, you know. if I catch my prey, will it lead to suffering? You know, no. You know, they're not thinking like this. But actually, human beings can think like this. But in today's society, we see we are conditioned that we cannot think in this way. And you know, since that's why there's so many advertisements, billboards, that you know, that all this is actually pushed on us. You know, that if you come in contact with objects or senses, you'll be happy. If you buy this product, you'll be happy. Just like, for example, you know, people engage in illicit relationships. You know, the whole endeavor first to establish a relationship is suffering. And then, you know, even later in the relationship, they experience so much suffering. There is divorce, you know, then the relationship breaks apart. Like once my spiritual master was showing me some slideshow which they show in New Zealand. And he was showing that how, like, you know, he was showing like couples, how they come together before they're so happy and, you know, they're embracing each other and they're going out, this and that. And then, you know, life is really good. Then after a while, they're screaming at each other, they're throwing things and shouting, and then there is divorce and all that. So, of course, he was addressing the Western mindset. You know, this is what goes on outside. So, but in today's society, we are actually, it is, all these things are pushed down upon us. That if you act in a certain way, that's what all advertisement is about, you know, marketing. You buy this product, you'll be happy. And but actually we see it's actually the opposite. And actually whatever we achieve in this world ends up in all zeros. Like Yadu Shrestha Prabhu, he was mentioning this point some while back, that you know, if one might be a millionaire, all the money is acquired, at the point of death it will be gone. You know, all our learning we have acquired, at the point of death it will be gone. For a few years we might have it, but because Krishna is saying material pleasure has a beginning and an end. That's why an intelligent person, a wise person, does not partake in it. So as devotees, we should actually analyze this. We should use our intelligence and analyze this point that actually all material pleasures have a beginning and an end. You know, so why waste our time in it? And Rishabhdev says that actually that verse, Nayam Deho Deha Bhaja Niloke Kashtan Kamar Arhate Veer Bhujam. That even hogs and dogs and even the lower species, they can get such sense pleasures, you know, easily. They don't have to, you know, go to a 9-to-5 job and, you know, they have to work so hard to get the same pleasures what people are aspiring for, you know, eating, sleeping, mating and defending. So the human form of life is actually meant for austerity. It's meant to perform austerity. And Prabhupada gives the example of a diseased person. Like a diseased person, you know, if the doctor tells him you should not take solid food, you should take liquids. So he has to abstain from solid food. If he thinks, you know, I want to eat solid food, I want to eat solid food, he will actually get more sick. So sense pleasure is like that, you know, sense gratification is like that. So in the diseased condition of life, one has to abstain from it. So, but there is sense pleasure, but it is in spiritual life. So it is not that sense pleasure is denied. Sense pleasure is there, but it is in spiritual life. But in the diseased condition of life, sense gratification is actually not good for the living entity. So sense pleasure is there. When one actually serves Krishna's senses, then automatically the living entity becomes, his senses are also satisfied naturally. And in other words, actually, one needs to cultivate the quality of tolerance. Without tolerance, you know, because the urges of the senses are very, very strong. One has to learn to tolerate them. And it's not that the urges of the senses, they'll be there only for a few years. No, they are actually there lifelong. The next verse in 5:23 actually mentions that the forces of anger, desire, you know, hate, they stay actually lifelong. So an intelligent person has to learn to tolerate them. So one has to develop intellectual conviction, and at the same time we need a higher taste, because simply by, you know, intellectual conviction, you know, you cannot overcome the urges of the senses. One also needs a higher taste. So these two things have to go hand in hand. So param drishva nirvartate, you know, that's why one has to engage one's senses in the service of the Lord. That way we can get a higher taste. And also, as Queen Kunti says, that one has to be materially exhausted in order to become serious in Krishna consciousness. So this verse actually points out that how material nature works. And as devotees, we have to get to the bottom of this verse. You know, it's easy to sit here and say all this, but actually, if we actually have to understand that the senses, when they come in contact with the sense objects, they lead to misery. And when one can get to the bottom of this, one can actually take up Krishna consciousness very seriously. Otherwise, it is like a tug of war. You know, on the one hand, we are trying to practice Krishna consciousness, but on the other hand, we are trying to fulfill all our desires. So there's always this tug of war, you know, which side to win. So if we can let go of this side, then our progress in Krishna consciousness is very, very fast. It's very, very rapid. So are there any questions or comments or corrections? Yes. Actually, Krishna tries to stop. It is described that when the living entity wanted to leave the spiritual world, Krishna tries to stop. You know, tries to, but still, but the it is example is given of a child. You know, the child is saying, "I want to put my hand in the fan. This fan rotating." Father is saying, "No, it's not good for you." You know, but it is still very. It is the child is still demanding very insistingly. So the father takes out, Prabhupada gives this example, father takes the plug out, so the fan has slowed down, then he says, now you put your hand in. So when the child puts its hand in, it gets hurt, then it realizes. So when we want to do something wrong, actually Krishna tries to point it out in many ways. You know, you might hear something in class, you know, Krishna, through the devotee Krishna might speak to you, or through other devotees, or when you read the Shastra, you might come across certain sections. So Krishna is always trying to tell us, this is not good for us. But because we are so hell-bent on our desires, then Krishna has to sanction it. Because otherwise there's no use of free will, you know. Our love for Krishna has to be spontaneous. But if we don't want to serve Krishna, you know, we want to go away, then Krishna has to reluctantly fulfill our desire. But Krishna tries all his best that we don't leave his association.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, Madhavi. Yes, thank you. It's a good point. The Lord doesn't fulfill all the desires. The Lord sees which desires are best to serve Him. So, you know, as Mataji pointed out, if our desire is to serve the Lord will facilitate that more and more. So we can have, you know, so many desires in Krishna consciousness, but it's subtly they might be aiming to satisfy ourselves in the name of Krishna consciousness. So, you know, the Lord might not fulfill that. So Krishna is independent. Krishna fulfills the desires which will actually bring us closer to Him. Or sometimes even if we don't have the desires, Krishna will put us in such situations that in which we'll get purified and want to approach Him more and more. Any other questions? Yes, Prabhupada.
You were mentioning about the tug of war between the desires and also progressing in speech and mind. So how right to overcome and begin progress more in speech and mind?
By using your intelligence to analyze this. So when you read the Bhagavad Gita or like Srimad Bhagavatam, I was hearing a lecture yesterday saying that when we read the books, Srila Prabhupada's books, we just simply don't read it for academic purposes. We don't read it so that it's good to read for information purposes. It's good. We don't read it so that we can just get academic knowledge. But we read it so that we can actually apply this knowledge in our life. So when you read such verses, you should think. You should just not go over it and, you know, next verse. But actually we should think that, you know, what is Krishna trying to say here? That, it says here. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses, and such pleasures have a beginning and end. So we should think like, you know, okay, I've experienced material pleasures. Then we should think, what is the nature of material pleasure? You know, it has a beginning and has an end. And they lead, and we should analyze how it leads to unhappiness, suffering. So when we analyze like this, and when we are a bit intellectually convinced, and at the same time we should engage in Krishna consciousness, chanting Hare Krishna, offering food to Krishna, and engaging in the 9 processes of devotional service. That way we can make fast advancement. So it's actually good to discuss such verses with devotees, you know, to that way your realization increases. So you can like take a verse and few devotees can get together and you can share all your realizations in that verse and you can challenge yourself. It's good to challenge ourselves. Like even materially people challenge themselves, you know, to achieve more and more. So spiritually we should challenge ourselves. Any questions? No? Yes, ma'am. Yes. All we can do is just desire, and
yes.
In that sense we are the karta or doer. Ultimate doer is Krishna.
Your mother, Yashoda, she tried so many times to tie him, but she couldn't do it. So she did it after he became much into
Thank you. You had a question, Mataji? You had a question? Okay. Thank you. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ji.